Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. We have a dynamic duo in the studio today for Medical Monday to respond to your questions and comments. It's a pairing of a medical oncologist and dermatologist who team up to treat skin cancers. The hot summer sun is returning, so here's your chance to ask these doctors how to protect yourself against skin cancer and what to do if you have it. Dr. Charles Weissman is a medical oncologist with New York Oncology Hematology in Clifton Park. He's a melanoma expert. Dr. Weissman earned his medical degree and completed his residency and fellowship at Albany Medical College. He's a founding member of the Upstate New York Society of Medical Oncology and Hematology and is a member of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. Dr. Joseph Schwartz is a board-certified dermatologist in Troy in Clifton Park, where he provides both medical and cosmetic dermatology treatment. Dr. Schwartz earned his medical degree at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. He completed his internship and residency in internal medicine at Mount Sinai Medical Center and at SUNY Brooklyn and Boston University. He also completed a fellowship in skin cancer at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Gentlemen, welcome.
Great to be with you, Alan.
Okay, it's great to have you here. We had, just by luck, a dermatologist last week, and we couldn't keep up with the call, so we are delighted that we're able to continue that way of doing things right now. Gentlemen, I just want to ask you, to begin with, doctors, if you could tell me what a melanoma looks like. Who wants to take that on?
Okay, well, melanomas are pigmented lesions. Usually they have color to them. That's what that means, the pigmentation. And that's one feature. A mnemonic that we use to help recognize melanoma is the ABCDE scheme. So we want to look for lesions that have asymmetrical shape. We want to look at the border, and if the border is irregular, that's a warning sign. C stands for color, as I mentioned. Usually melanomas are darkly pigmented, and they can have variable coloration. They can be black, brown. But then again, sometimes there's less pigmentation. They could almost look red. D is for diameter, which basically refers to the size of a lesion. Most moles are less than 6 millimeters in size. And melanomas typically are larger than that. They can start very small, but typically by the time they're recognized, they're greater than 6 millimeters. And E is either for evolution or enlargement. Moles are stable, static lesions. They don't change after they develop as a child or a young adult. However, melanoma is a cancer, and it will grow. That's the hallmark of all cancers, really, is atypical growth. So if you have a lesion that's pigmented and irregularly shaped and growing, that's definitely something that needs to be checked.
Doctor, anything to add?
The important fact here is that it changes over time. As Dr. Schwartz said, they can arise from many different areas that you might not expect and areas that you may not see unless another person is available. For example, your back, they can occur from the scalp or under fingernails rarely, and other areas that are not necessarily exposed to sunlight.
And so is it your job to take them out when you find them?
That'll be
Dr. Schwartz's
job to at least make the diagnosis, and then these are often referred to surgeons, general surgeons or plastic surgeons to remove them completely.
Mm-hmm. The first step when somebody is evaluated is to see whether there are some lesions that look suspicious. If there is a suspicious looking mole or pigmented lesion, then a biopsy would be performed. And that can usually be done rather quickly and at the time of the office visit.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, the specimen is sent for pathology evaluation. And that's really the key thing. You can suspect a melanoma by looking at it. However, the diagnosis is really made by histopathology. It's how it looks under the microscope. And it's really the pattern and of the lesion and the shape and type of cells that are seen. And that is still the way a melanoma is diagnosed. And we still stage it that way initially. I think in the future you're going to see more emphasis placed on not the morphology or histopathology of the lesion, but of the cytogenetic analysis of the lesions. I think we've gone about as far as we can in terms of staging things by how they look, and the next level is really to look at the genetics.
Okay.
And Dr. Weissman will talk more about how that can also be used not only for diagnosis and staging, but also for therapy.
Okay, so Dr. Weissman, there are some people who are more prone to these than others, right?
Yes, definitely. The people who have fair skin, colored eyes, blue, green, or have red hair or blonde hair, those people generally have a significantly increased risk of developing melanoma, particularly with history of sun exposure.
And a no-no, here are the no-nos. No-no number one is don't go out and look for a tan, right? I mean, that's...
Tanning and exposure to ultraviolet radiation is one of the causes of all skin cancers, melanoma and non-melanoma skin cancers. I should mention that skin cancers are different types. You have what we call non-melanoma skin cancers, which are basal cell cancers, sure, and squamous cell cancers, which are much more common than melanoma. However, melanoma tends to be the more dangerous type because melanoma can spread to other areas of the body, whereas basal cell and squamous cell cancers usually stay in one place and just grow locally in that place.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, people who put those, aluminum things under their heads and go out in the sun with them, that's really crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's certainly not really healthy behavior. I mean, with all cancers, the goal is really prevention. It's prevention and then early detection. But, you know, before you, the best is to avoid developing the cancer in the first place. Mm-hmm. And we know that ultraviolet radiation is one of the key players in developing all types of skin cancers, including melanoma. I mean, there's certainly a genetic component to it, but the vast majority of skin cancers are induced by ultraviolet radiation, and therefore we do recommend proper sun protection that includes sunblock, but also using protective clothing, also wearing sunglasses to protect your eyes. So it's a combination of things. I think it's a mistake to just have somebody put some sunscreen on and be out in the sun all day, because it can prevent you from burning, but you can also be absorbing more ultraviolet A radiation, which can penetrate deep, cause skin cancers and other types of sun damage.
In the old days, people used to walk around, the ladies used to walk around with parasols. Mm-hmm. Should we start that again?
Yes, absolutely.
It's a great idea. The actual development of clothing recently, I think, is an excellent step forward, because the clothing can screen out ultraviolet radiation but still be cool and let the skin breathe in the summer.
Okay, so we're going to take some calls if it's all right with you guys. And let's go and start with Jim from Matamoros, our usual number one caller. Jim, keep it short. Go ahead.
How do cutaneous lymphoma and mycosis fungoides present differently from the big three, basal cell, squamous cell carcinoma, and malignant lymphoma?
Okay, did anybody get that? Because I didn't.
That's a question about cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. Mm-hmm. That would present much differently than non-melanoma or basal cell or squamous cell. And that would present more as a dermatitis or look like a rash.
Ah.
And early on, it can mimic psoriasis and even eczema. Later on, cutaneous T-cell lymphoma would develop more tumors and thicker lesions on the skin. But it's not something that would be that would be confused with melanoma.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. And let's go to Abigail in Kingston. Abigail, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, Alan. Glad that you let me on. Anyway, I've been listening to this, and I'm taking linguistics at the moment. Well, not at the moment, but I'm studying linguistics, and I must say that this, all of your science, is wonderful in terms of increasing our vocabulary. Many years ago, I was asked to take a test, and I decided not to because I always fail tests the first time, and they're always finding something wrong. So I believe in leaving well enough alone.
What does that mean?
Anyway, I don't know. It's so interesting. And I really would like to have...
Abigail, leaving well enough alone would be the last thing you want to do if you see a melanoma on your arm.
No, Alan. Alan, death is inevitable or inedible, whatever. One of my students once said that, inedible. I loved it. But it's inevitable. And I'm like, you know, it's okay with me. You know, I go when I go.
No, I don't get it. I don't get it. And I think...
All right, sweetheart. Okay, you be well. Take care.
Okay, you too. You too. I just think you're wrong.
Bye. Okay.
All right. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Ladies and gentlemen, and I think the doctors will probably agree with me, if you see a growth on your arm, you want to have it evaluated, especially if it meets these criteria for a melanoma, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to leave well enough alone.
If any of these skin cancers are caught very early, they're very easily taken care of with minimal discomfort or disfigurement.
Yeah, okay. And here we'll go to Lewis in Little Falls. Okay. Lewis in Little Falls. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, gentlemen. I had a squamous cell removed from my ear, and it's returned very small. The plastic surgeons suggested I just keep an eye on it. It was in situ, the initial one was, and not worry about it. Is this good advice, or should I just have this removed?
Well, when you have a skin cancer, in situ means that it's the earliest stage. But what's going to happen if you leave it is the potential that it develops into invasive squamous cell carcinoma. So it should definitely be taken care of at this point. The longer you wait, the more trouble it's going to cause. Particularly,
yeah, that's what I thought. I was very surprised that he, you know, he sent me out of his office. I mean, any idea what he was thinking of? He said it was so tiny, should not be concerned with it.
I'm not exactly sure what went on there. But if the lesion is growing or changing, it should definitely be reevaluated.
Okay.
Right, any suggestions on the best type of person to have this, the best way to have this removed?
Well, I think you need to see a dermatologist or a cutaneous oncologist who is familiar with, you know, looking at lesions and handling them, and take it from there.
Okay, we've got to go, Lewis. Thank you very much. All right. And now we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Ellis Medicine, working to help nurses make changes in the lives of others and their own lives. EllisNurses.org for more information. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. The Arthur Zane Kell Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available. Skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. And from Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road, Colony. Mother's Day reservations at realseafoodco.com. Seafood cuisine and raw bar for over 30 years, realseafoodco.com.
And we are back, and lucky we are, because we have Drs. Weissman and Schwartz with us today, and the phones are getting loaded. We have one free phone, 1-800-348-2551. Ted in Ulster. Ted, you're on.
Hi, doctors. Thanks for taking my call. The UV, I'm concerned about the UV in the cornea. UV glasses. You know, I mean sunglasses. I always wear sunglasses, or actually just clear glasses generally, because they're all UV mandated now to have protection, even dollar store ones, I believe. And I was wondering, are you there?
Yeah, we're here listening.
Okay, good. I was wondering if when I can take them off, when it's after dusk, dark.
The risk.
Can you get UV through looking through windows?
The risk is related to actual exposure of the eye to the ultraviolet radiation. Typically, that occurs with direct sunlight. However, you can also get reflected rays off of water and solid surfaces, so that if there is the possibility that there are those surfaces nearby, in addition to the sun, those would be areas where you would want to protect your eyes.
Okay.
Yeah. And
great. Now, at what point before sundown could you safely, you know, during a cloudy day, there's still plenty of UV coming through?
That's correct.
Now, at what point would it be safe enough not to use, you know, totally safe, minutia safe, to take off your sunglasses?
Well, the most direct sun exposure, ultraviolet exposure, occurs between 10 and 2, with decreasing exposures in the summertime till dusk. But I think the greatest risk occurs during the bright daylight hours.
And of course, you know, people wear sunglasses because of the glare. And, you know, later in the day and early on driving to work, there may not be that much UV. However, you know, you'll need the sunglasses just so you can, you know, protect your eyes from the glare.
Well,
so, but as far as ultraviolet, Dr. Weissman says that the UV is filtered as the sun is lower in the sky. But I think common sense would dictate when you know to wear your sunglasses during obviously the peak UV hours, and then later during the day just to prevent the glare.
I tend to like the clear. Would it be better to use sunglasses so the pupil is smaller or larger or clear?
I think you do need to have a tinted glass to give full protection. Although the plastic will filter a lot of the ultraviolet. Ophthalmologists do recommend using a tinted lens to protect the eye, and also that's, I think, very important. It's
okay.
Not just enough to use regular glasses.
Okay, Dr. Schwartz, if you don't get protection, and your eyes are damaged, what are the cancer outcomes?
I think for eyes, the risk there's a condition called ocular melanoma. That's not that common. I think the reason to protect your eyes is there are other reasons in terms of eye diseases.
Cataracts.
Things like cataracts, particularly macular degeneration. Cataracts can be fixed. Macular degeneration is a leading cause of blindness, and UV is related to that.
Great.
So that's key.
Thank you, Ted.
I can hang up?
Yeah, we're gonna, thanks very much.
Quickly, and I'll hang up if you can take it.
No, go ahead, but we have five people behind you.
The little things and skin tags, when do you have to differentiate from a skin tag that's been there for years and getting that checked out if it's not racer? Thank you. Any understand?
Yeah.
Thank you.
In general, if you have a little piece of skin or a skin tag, if there's no bleeding or soreness, it's probably not a big deal.
Okay. And we'll go to Landon in Milford, Pennsylvania. Okay, Landon, you're on.
Good afternoon, doctors.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
Just last month, most of March, March 1st through March 20th, me, my wife, and my two-year-old son spent a lot of time in St. Barnabas. My son received a third-degree burn on his chin, a couple second degrees on his chest and arms from pulling a rice cooker onto himself. Doctors were hoping for a smooth, natural recovery, but the option of skin grafting was always there. And now next week, this Thursday, we're actually going back to St. Barnabas, and we're going in for skin grafting under his chin. So there's a small portion that's still slightly healing. And it's just taken a little too long, and the doctors felt that it's better to go with the skin grafting. We agreed, so that's what we're doing. After that, they said it's about a week recovery. Once we get out of the hospital's care and we're at home, I mean, you know, spring, summer, the sun's starting to come out now, what types of things can we do at home to help this healing process and make sure that his skin returns the best to normal as possible? What would you suggest?
Well, hopefully, again, this doesn't relate that much to skin cancer, but hopefully the doctors caring for your son will give you proper follow-up care for the wound area.
Okay.
But I think in terms of relating to today's discussion, any area that's been damaged or scarred, does pose an increased risk for developing skin cancer, particularly squamous cell carcinoma. So sun protection is very important, also to prevent abnormal pigmentation from the area as it's healing. So to sort of relate it to today's conversation, I would definitely recommend very, very good sun protection with sunscreen and proper protective clothing.
No, Dr. Weissman. Oh.
Yeah, this
okay, what's considered a really, really good sun protection?
Hold on. We're going to give you a little bit more answer. Go ahead, doctor.
This relates to the importance of using sunscreen in the future in any area, particularly that's been previously damaged. It makes the skin more at risk.
And what number screen?
We generally recommend at least 30 protection or higher. You don't achieve much greater protection from UV exposure with higher UV protection, but at least 30 would be recommended.
Okay, and he's very fair. He has light greenish blue eyes like his mother. He takes after his mother on that aspect, so that same thing applies?
Yeah, I think since we started talking about sunscreen, I think people could kind of hung up on the SPF number.
Okay.
But more important is using the proper amount of sunscreen and reapplying it as frequently. Because if you
go to the ocean and you come out, you want to put it
on. If you're playing tennis and you're sweating and toweling off, you need to reapply.
So we'll probably stay away from water as long as possible. I don't know. I mean, especially with the skin grafting. I don't feel it's going to the ocean anytime, swimming is okay, is what you're saying?
Swimming should be fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Landon, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, and we'll go now to Emily in Holyoke. Okay, Emily, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I knew a man who in his mid-40s developed a melanoma internally where no sunshine can approach, and unfortunately he died of this. I'm wondering if you can talk about what are some of the other causes of melanoma when UV radiation isn't even part of the picture.
Well, melanoma is a skin disease. If someone has melanoma, you're talking about inside the abdomen, is something like that? Is that correct?
Yeah, in the colon, I think, was what I was told. And this is, of course, secondhand. I wasn't about to get nosy.
Yeah, people don't have melanoma arising de novo or by itself from the colon. What most likely happened is that he had a skin lesion somewhere that metastasized to the colon. Melanomas, unfortunately, can metastasize anywhere in the body, including the bowel and internal organs.
Huh. So that wouldn't have been the primary site. It would have been something that traveled.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. And 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. There's a free phone if you want to use it. Let's go to Ginny in New Paltz. Ginny, you're on.
Hi. I have had two types of skin cancer. I've had a basal cell by the side of my nose that was treated with a Mohs procedure, and I've had a squamous on my finger that was treated with a simple excision. I have blue eyes and fair skin. I burned a lot when I was a kid, even though I hardly went out to the sun. I'm now 70. I want to know, I have a two-part question. First of all, am I at higher risk of melanoma since I've already had the two less invasive types of skin cancer? And the second part of my question is, since I now use a lot of sunscreen, am I at risk of vitamin D deficiency?
Okay, well, I'll help answer your question for you. I mean, clearly you are at risk to develop melanoma based on your previous history of non-melanoma skin cancer, but also your skin type and, you know, your genetics. Having fair skin, blue eyes, like Dr. Weissman said earlier, are risk factors, and having non-melanoma skin cancer is also a risk factor. So you should be checked regularly, and you should use good sun protection as you are. In terms of the vitamin D, I think one size does not fit all. Somebody like yourself who is at high risk for melanoma and has already had skin cancers shouldn't be concerned about getting vitamin D through ultraviolet light. You should be getting your vitamin D through supplementation. And I really think if you took 1,000 or 2,000 units of vitamin D a day, you would have no problem maintaining healthy vitamin D levels. And you shouldn't really be thinking about having to expose your skin in order to develop vitamin D in that fashion.
Dr. Weissman?
I absolutely agree with what Dr. Schwartz said. There's a lot on the internet and in the literature about vitamin D and how exposure to sunlight allows people to have vitamin D levels that are normal. However, the risks of ultraviolet radiation far outweigh the benefits, and it's much better to get your vitamin D from
a pill,
diet, and from supplementation.
I take 5,000 units a day. I hope that's not too much. But
okay. So should I be somewhat hypervigilant about looking for any other kinds of skin lesions, since I'm at higher risk of melanoma, too?
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that, because melanoma and skin cancer in general is uniquely, the unique ability for the individual to recognize it themselves. And you can do a skin exam yourself, the self-exam.
Uh-huh.
Just as women can do a breast exam, men can do a testicular exam, you can do a skin exam. And if you go, you should have a routine where you do that, say, every month, where you start from your head and move down and look at all the nooks and crannies and look for any new lesions.
How about your back?
What to look for. You need to use mirrors, and there is a little
scheme. Or a mate.
A mate is...
Yes.
That's dermatologic foreplay.
Right.
So you can definitely do that, and you should, when next time you see your dermatologist, make sure they go over the how to do a proper self-skin exam. But again, the thing that's frustrating often in dermatology, and when you see somebody come in with an advanced lesion, is these things have been growing right there for everybody to see. And all it really takes is recognition for people not to ignore things, and to get off, their butts and get it checked. And that can really save your life.
I wanted to ask Dr. Weissman a follow-up question. Are primary care physicians capable of making these distinctions between a melanoma and a less serious blemish?
Well, melanoma can be difficult to diagnose even by a dermatologist, and studies have shown that melanomas can be very variable in their appearance. But a primary care physician should be able to determine if a lesion is suspicious enough to warrant a dermatologist looking at it.
And then finding a dermatologist, not always that easy, is it?
Well, I think there's certainly in some areas a shortage of providers. But, the thing I always hear is somebody makes a call and they can't get an appointment for 3 months, so then they forget about it and they call 6 months later. So it's not that hard. Just get the appointment, even if you have to wait a month or two. Usually that's not the problem. It's if you put it off and keep putting it off, and then it comes 6 months and a year.
What happens if you show up in the emergency room?
That's probably not the best utilization of an emergency room. I find that emergency room care for skin lesions or common skin problems is really not very effective.
Okay.
I think when the person makes the call to the dermatologist, if you tell the
receptionist
that I have a skin lesion that's changing in size or color, that would be a light bulb for them to get you in quickly.
Interesting, interesting.
And in the same vein, if you go to your primary care doctor and the primary care doctor suspects there's a problem and they pick up the phone, there's no dermatologist that won't respond and get you seen as a patient very quickly.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
You work together. Is really
listen,
important.
Jenny, we've got to let you go. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah,
thank
bye.
You.
Bye. Okay. And we'll go to Ronnie. Okay. Ronnie, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. It's not really about me, doctors, but my mother-in-law, back in 1979 and then in 81, had melanoma. She was fortunate enough to have as her doctor, Dr. Frederick Gollum. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but back then he was fairly well known. Anyway, when it returned in 81, he started treating her with the tuberculosis vaccine. I think he did it for 18 months. And, the idea being to activate her immune system to fight it. Well, it never came back until 1997. One was found on the same side behind her ear. And at that time, Dr. Gollum removed it, but she was living in the Philadelphia area, so we took her tumor to Dr. Bird.
Okay, wait. I just want to announce a rule, a Shark Talk rule.
Yes.
We never mention doctors' names on this.
Oh, because, I'm very sorry.
Because they're not here to fight back. You know,
right.
Sometimes,
no,
you know.
I'll just say good things anyway.
Okay, go ahead.
My real question is, my mother-in-law died of old age at 96. The melanoma did not kill her. It never came back again. And my question is, the immunotherapy that she had, do you suppose that was all that effective, or was it just luck? Because my husband is genetically exactly like her as far as skin goes. And so I'm wondering if that was, if it was.
Okay, we got it. Dr. Weissman?
Ronnie, that's a good question, and it hints on the interaction between melanoma and a person's immune system. The treatment that you're talking about is what we call BCG, which is similar to a tuberculosis vaccine. In the old days, 20, 30 years ago, BCG was very actively researched in terms of treatment or prevention for malignancies of various sorts, but never turned out to be effective. If we go to the current state of affairs, there's been an absolute revolution in treatment of melanoma because of new immunotherapy medicines that have been developed.
Uh-huh.
And in the last 5 years, there's been six or seven new treatments that have been approved by the FDA as treatment for melanoma, even when it's spread to different areas of the body. And the immunotherapy treatments now are a hallmark of treatment.
A real revolution. As
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so Ronnie, I'm sorry. We're up against a hard break. We're going to have to take it. We thank you for your very good call. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, doctors.
Bye.
Thank you, Ellen. Bye.
Support comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, now specializing in makoplasty partial knee surfacing as an option to total knee replacement for early to mid-stage osteoarthritis, healthquest.org/ortho. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years, kenthicksconstruction.com. Fox Gloves Garden Gloves, made with performance sport materials designed for gardening, birding, hiking, and many outdoor activities. Machine washable, foxglovesgardengloves.com. And from Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Dine-in, takeout, delivery, 518-432-0358.
And we are back with Dr. Schwartz and Weissman. Very lucky to have both of these distinguished gentlemen here. I want to ask you a question. I know that this may be a little bit crude, Dr. Weissman, but I want to ask it. Do you have to be some kind of nut to do indoor tanning?
No. The, quote, benefits of appearing tan is very prominent, particularly in young people today, especially young women.
What's a benefit? Do you mean to look sort of arbitrarily attractive?
Well, that goes back to the early 1900s and subsequently 1950s, where the commercials showed people getting tanned and looking great in their fashions.
They should be sued.
It turns out that look at surveys, 35% of adults and 59% of college students have used indoor tanning
That's
at some point in their time in their life, and 17% of teens. Indoor tanning is really putting a gun to your head.
It's suicidal, in other words.
It's been shown that analysis of studies shows that any indoor tanning will increase the risk of melanoma by 16%, and women under 30 are six times more likely to develop melanoma if they use indoor tanning. As little as one indoor tanning can increase the risk of basal cell and squamous cell cancers. And if people have used indoor tanning more than 10 times, the risk of melanoma is significantly increased by at least double.
We heard over the internet from Robert, he says permethrin. You guys know, yeah. Is it potentially cancerous based on long-term exposure through clothing soaked in the chemical? In other words, military exposure in Iraq for 1 year.
Permethrins are used to as insect repellents, mm-hmm. and they can be applied to clothing, to treat clothing, to keep particularly things like ticks off you. It's felt to be safe if used properly. However, you certainly would want to limit the exposure and just use the proper amounts necessary following the instructions to treat the clothing. But I think in general, the risk, if you're in an area where there's a lot of tick-borne diseases, probably the risk of that is greater than any risk that you'd get from the chemicals that you use to prevent, whether it be a DEET type of insect repellent or the permethrin. So I don't think they're bad ideas if you're at risk to develop tick-borne diseases.
Interesting. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. We got two free phones. Let's go to Kathleen in Johnstown. Kathleen, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I'm calling about my father, who is a frail, elderly, 94-and-a-half-year-old. He had biopsies on two areas on his head recently. Diagnosis was squamous cell. Now, he had, in 2011, he had surgery near that same area. And at that time, the diagnosis was basal cell. So he was recommended maybe surgery or a scrape and burn. He really doesn't want to do anything at this point. And so I guess my question is, how fast growing is this? Consequences of just not doing anything.
Okay. Well, this is Dr. Schwartz. There's a few issues. One is just the symptoms from the lesion, and if things aren't treated, you can get a lot of bleeding. It could weep and things like that. So there's the concern about that. I mean, somebody who is a very elderly, it's not likely to be the cause of death. So you might want to find some compromise and a treatment that's going to reduce some of the lesions, maybe allowing it to heal a little bit without having to undergo any major invasive procedures. I think frequently it's towards the end of life when people start to fail, their immune systems fail, and really your immune system helps control skin cancers from developing. And you just see at the end of life often lots of things just popping up, even though the person may not be in the sun. It's just that it's really amazing, and it's true of other conditions where you're immunosuppressed, whether it be lymphoma or things like that. Dr. Weissman can speak to that, how all of a sudden you start to see skin cancers develop.
So it because of his age, and I mean he is healthy, but is really frail, mm-hmm. and is failing. Is it? Do you see any serious consequences? I guess in letting in not doing anything.
Most of these cancers are relatively slow growing for the most part.
Okay,
and I think just by watching it very closely, you can get an idea of how progressive it is. As Dr. Schwartz said, you don't want to wait too long to the point where this requires a larger procedure when it could be taken care of very easily just by a scraping or cauterization.
I think everybody wants to know that. I don't want to play with these terms, but the minor league cancers as opposed to, the major league cancers, people get them taken care of all the time. Do we overdo the taking care of? In other words, if we just left them, would it really constitute a danger?
I think it's important to treat skin cancers early. They will continue to grow, and a lesion that could be relatively small and be easily handled, if you leave it, can do a lot of structural damage. Even though basal cells, I've only had one patient with a metastatic basal cell in over 20 years. So it's usually not a life-threatening condition. Mm. But if you leave a lesion and it develops, you can do serious structural damage. And I certainly have had a lot of patients who have lost ears and noses, entire parts of their body due to basal cell carcinoma. Again, very rare cause of death, but a very common cause of disfigurement.
Kathleen, got to let you go. A lot of people behind you. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, let's go to Alan in, I'm so sorry, in Narcissistic. It's Ann in Altamont. Go ahead, Ann. You're on.
Yes, I have a question on timing. You talked about, not letting things go, and you just mentioned now disfigurement if you let things go too long. Well, my sister has a spot on her nose, and she's scheduled for surgery, and she said they're going to have to take cartilage from her ear because it's deep, but her surgery's not scheduled till the middle of June, and I'm just going to be driving her, and it just seemed like, isn't that a long time to wait, or is that not such a long time to wait?
It seems like it's scheduled longer than one would like it to be. I'm not sure what the reason for the delay is.
But it's at the VA, so I don't know if that's part of it, but... Yeah.
Schwartz is nodding his head knowingly.
Yeah, I think you have to look at the history of what's been going on. And many lesions are extremely slow growing, so it might have been something that developed over the past 3 years, and waiting 2 months won't be a big deal.
Okay.
Some lesions, particularly squamous cell carcinomas as opposed to basal cell, can grow quite rapidly and can really double in size within 6 weeks. So I think you have to look back at the behavior of the particular lesion. And that's probably the best way to guide you.
Okay, Ann in Altamont, thank you. Let's go to Joan in Greenfield. All right, Joan, you're on.
Hi, Alan and doctors.
Hi.
I have a dear friend who's developed a basal cell carcinoma below her lip. And her dentist identified this. And after some talk of having surgery, she decided to wait and take cannabis oil. So I think she's using this topically as well as taking a capsule of some kind. And I just am wondering what you think about that. I'm not in favor of it, knowing absolutely nothing. But
I'm not in favor of it either, knowing less than you do. Dr. Weissman.
I'm not aware of cannabis oil having any beneficial effect on these type of cancers.
And neither am I.
Okay, well, that answers your question, Joan. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Mary in Rhinebeck. Okay, Mary in Rhinebeck, you're on.
Yes, hi, doctors. I'm calling because I was diagnosed with basal cell carcinoma roughly 2 years ago. And since then, I get these little, I call them pimples, on my face area. And my dermatologist, she has removed them. But what she does is she pops it with a pin and she squeezes it, and this little, I don't know what it is, comes out of it, and then it goes away. But then all of a sudden I get one or two more. Since then I've read an article saying that if you were diagnosed with this basal cell carcinoma, that you're prone to getting these little white spots. Do you know anything about that?
Well, what you're describing are milia. They're tiny little cysts. And
yes.
I think you do see them more with sun damage, so there can be an association there, and you can see them after you've had any surgery or healing, so there can be an association there. But I don't think that's particularly a big deal in terms of it relating to skin cancer.
Okay.
I tend to get them on my eyelids.
That's a common area for them.
It is. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye-bye. And talk to your dermatologist, and he or she will tell you what they're doing and explain better, hopefully.
I remember in the old days when I was a kid, we all used to go cause blackheads and, things. Do you guys still do that kind of work?
Well, it's funny. I think back 20, 30 years ago, most of the visits that dermatologists had were kids with acne, and it's really changed a lot. The pediatricians handle a lot of the common acne now.
I see.
And usually I will see patients who have more advanced acne problems.
The only reason I ask is because of the very graphic discussion of popping the stuff and squeezing the stuff out. Okay, let's go to Mary in, was that? Oh, no, we did that already. So let's go to Kevin in post and kill. Okay, Kevin, we're coming down to the end. Be brief. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was diagnosed with a melanoma on the side of my face. It was doing all the things that you talked about earlier and finally had it taken off. But I'm not clear on what go-forward care plan for the future, and kind of what scares me is hearing people say it can show up anywhere at any time again. So what would you recommend?
Kevin, give me some more information. What did the dermatologist say about the pathology on the melanoma? Do you have that information?
It was early stage one.
Okay. Well, that's good. And there are more specific factors that we look at when we examine a melanoma that determines the risk of recurrence. Obviously, stage one means that it's a relatively thin melanoma that was removed. And most people will do very well in that situation, with a relatively small chance of recurrence, probably only a 10 or 15% risk of recurrence, depending on the different factors in your particular melanoma. Generally, in this type of situation, just observation alone is recommended with a visit to the dermatologist, typically a minimum of every 6 months, and regular follow-up by your primary care physician as well, with particular attention to feeling the lymph nodes of your neck and looking at your skin elsewhere.
Kevin, running out of time. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to Mike in Tribes Hill. Mike in Tribes Hill, keep it short, Mike. Go ahead.
Okay, doctor. Thank you, Alan.
Yep.
My wife has been diagnosed with a squamous cell on her shin of her leg, and had it surgically removed. It came back, and got a second opinion. The second doctor said to take Mohs surgery to have it removed. The primary physician, first physician, said, absolutely do not do it. It'll come back. We had the Mohs surgery. It came back. Now we called the other doctor, number one, back again, and she said, you should be using methotrexate for this keratoma, not to cut it. And we're between a rock and a hard place of what to do.
Okay, we're really running out of time. So, Dr. Schwartz, you want to start?
Well, this is a pretty specific question, and without knowing all the details, it's hard to answer. I can't say that it's not uncommon for one to get very stubborn lesions on the legs. There's something called a keratoacanthoma, and there's a type of squamous cell carcinoma, and they're notorious for coming back. The risk of them spreading internally is low, but they can be very difficult to treat locally.
Okay.
And sometimes you can use things like methotrexate and injections. I don't think they were talking about chemotherapy, but again, this is sort of a specific case. We'd have to get more info.
Okay. That's a good one. Now let's go to very quickly, Cheryl. You got 1 minute, Cheryl. I mean, 1 minute. We got to go.
Okay. A very simple one. If you have raised moles, like really big raised moles, are they at really seriously higher risk for cancer or not?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a misconception that a lot of times patients come in and they'll point to raised fleshy moles, and those are almost never a problem. With melanoma, again, you want to look for things that look like a stain in the skin. They start off flat, but they're changing and growing. Like Dr. Weissman said, cancer, melanoma, it will change and grow.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily raising, but spreading.
Okay, I'm afraid that is going to be it. We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to, let's see here, Jane of Goshen. I'd also like to thank Dr. Charles Weissman and Joseph Schwartz for joining us today. Underwriting support for the Vox Pop comes from Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability. Design for the next 100 years. CNHArchitects.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Very patient, very good. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Likewise, our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.